This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
It's better over here.
AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free. All on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Pay off up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Now it's time for Inside the Clubhouse, a show dedicated to the Chicago baseball fan, featuring the best Chicago baseball conversation, as well as the big MLB topics, along with the biggest names, greatest guests, and listener interaction on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
And all eyes on Roki Sasaki.
You're thinking fastball all the way. It's fastball and then adjust.
Those are in. It strikes out swinging. 1-0-2.
Well, Mexico has their hands full, that's for sure. That's the first batter, and that's what he's throwing.
Good morning, Chicago. We hope your Saturday is off to a great start. Judson Richards, Bruce Levine with you for the next 2 hours talking baseball. Bruce, it is an absolute pleasure to be with you this morning.
Judson, welcome to our humble airwaves. I know you've been on the Score before doing your own shows, and this is just the progression of hopefully a long time and many appearances at the Score. We are inside the clubhouse. We're here with you every Saturday morning, 9 to 11, talking baseball, 50 to 52 weeks out of the year, depending on some of the other important programming that goes on in the Score. But we're here for you all winter long, talking hot stove, White Sox, Cubs, everything national baseball here at 312-644-6767. And Judson, let's get right into it. Obviously, you heard the open. It's Roki Sasaki, the Japanese pitcher who is going to get posted by the Japanese leagues here in, well, there's two posting periods. One ends December 15th. The other, January 15th. It's more likely that January 15th is a time that the Chicago Cubs and other teams will be bidding up on Sasaki.
Sasaki's an interesting one because you feel like anytime his name is mentioned, he's then followed by three paragraphs to describe when he's posting this date, December 15th, but if he waits until January 15th, but he's also an amateur, which means that he can only make so much amount of money. And teams that are spending internationally, they will be replenished by the time you get to January 15th. But no matter what, if you look at a guy who has touched 90 or 103 miles per hour, but can sit 97 to 99, the money that he is going to be making sounds nothing like the contracts that we're used to hearing attached to these Japanese baseball stars.
Right. Well, you know, the interesting thing, you know, Judson, is that it's a copycat league. Most of the leagues are. And here we've seen great success from Japanese pitchers, Japanese players over the last few years. Certainly Ohtani is one of the great players in the history of baseball. Whether he plays another game or not, it's, you know, he's going to go down as one of the greatest players. And then you have Yamamoto coming over, Imanaga coming over. You know, the era of the Japanese pitcher is here to stay. You still have Yu Darvish, any number of other good Japanese pitchers in the league. So the copycat aspect of this, there's a lot of American players that throw 97, 98, 99. There's American players that have splitters. But here you have a 23-year-old guy that has been dominant for the last 4 years in Japan. And everybody is lining up to try to get him because the economics are right and the time that you're going to be able to hold on to him is right. This is different. He's not going to be a free agent like Yamamoto that's over 25 that signs and can sign for any amount of years and any amount of money, as you alluded to. This is all about him signing basically a minor league contract, getting a high bonus from international money. And the most international money anybody can give him is probably $6 to $7 million. And that would be the entire amount of a team's international bonus money, which is not normally done, right? In this case, it might be. You know, teams like the Cubs or the Padres or Dodgers or whoever else is rumored to be on Sasaki is going to have to give up a big bonus because he is going to be under contract control for 6 years. He'll make the minimum, and then in his third, fourth, and fifth year, or fourth, fifth, and sixth year, he'll be eligible for salary arbitration.
Can you call him the most desirable free agent, right? Because obviously there's going to be three, maybe four teams in on Juan Soto of spending over $600 million. And we'll get to Juan coming up in just a few minutes. But with financially how reasonable it is with the talent and projections of Roky Sasaki, is he the most desirable of all 30 teams around Major League Baseball? Because everyone's willing to spend that money.
I would say Garrett Crochet.
Garrett over. Right.
Now, the only difference is you have Crochet for 2 years.
2 years.
So whoever is going to trade for Crochet is going to be able to negotiate a contract as they see fit. And it's up to Crochet and his people to decide. The more intriguing part of Sasaki is you have him for 6 years. Okay. Is that a good thing or a bad thing? Good thing is it's not going to cost you a lot of money initially. The bad thing is that if he gets injured, you know, who is this player? Okay. Right. Is he just the same as anyone else in Major League Baseball making a rehab, or is he automatically a dominant pitcher coming over from Japan because of the sample size that we've all seen of Otani, Yamamoto, and Imanaga coming over and being dominant pitchers in America?
312-644-6767 on this cold fall day. We can think of the days of summer out there at the ballpark. You want to talk some baseball, let's do so. 312-644-6767. Bruce, I should mention, great show lined up. Jim Deshaies will join us coming up at 9:30. We'll talk some Cubs with him. Also, Ryan Fuller, the new director of hitting for the White Sox, will join us at 10:30 this morning.
Yeah, that's going to be fascinating to talk to him because the White Sox have come to age as far as dealing with the metrics and the R&D departments moving forward. The White Sox were light years behind in the past, and now with Chris Getz at the head, he's brought in nothing but young superstar-type executives and directors to be on the ground floor with him. There's a lot of these guys that you talk to, and Ryan will be the latest one that we talk to on Inside the Clubhouse today. Excited because they're not just being brought into an old organization with old ideas. They are part of the ground floor. Chris Getz is a wide open guy to the idea of bringing in the best and the brightest people to work with. And as smart as Chris is and as confident as he is, he has no ego about power, okay? His idea is to be brought in here and take basically, you know, Judson, what an expansion team is in the White Sox and making it, you know, a great team with great instructors, great front office people, and hopefully eventually great players as well.
Yeah, and led by a very youthful 42-year-old Will Venable, their new manager. So the rumor mill of Roky Sasaki, Bruce, can we attach them to the Cubs? As I said, it's very desirable, very affordable, which is hard to find in baseball. I think you do hear the Dodgers most mentioned, which is somewhat frustrating when you look at an affordable guy, because we know that they're willing to pay. And they'd be like, can someone else just get the most talented arm coming from Japan, not name, you know, Shota Imanaga?
Or, Yamamoto.
Right. They got him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, look, here are the pluses and minuses of Sasaki desiring a team like the Cubs over the Dodgers, okay? And I'll let you take the first part.
Sorry.
What are some of those advantages in your mind?
For Sasaki?
To come to the Cubs rather than the Dodgers.
Well, a couple things I've seen, and I like this one. You can shoot it down if you want. But, you know, first of all, Sasaki is really carving out his own path. I mean, he could wait two more years and get as much money as we've seen Yamamoto get. But he wants to come here now. So does that mean that he wants to then be in the shadows of a Shohei Ohtani or, you know, Yamamoto? But also, if he's going to make up that money that he's left on the table, that may be by way of endorsements. And you may perhaps cut yourself short by endorsements if you go to the team that may be most popular for Japanese players in Los Angeles. You would not necessarily be the first in line if you were to go somewhere else.
Right. I would say his services would be a little less money than if it's Ohtani or even Yamamoto.
Yeah.
But I don't believe that he is looking at this as a money-making venture.
Right.
Because as you said, at 25, he could wait.
It's 2 years away.
And be a total free agent. And, you know, if his health holds out, and that, again, we don't know. If his health holds out, he'd probably be a $300 million player.
Yeah.
Right? Okay.
But he wants to come here now.
It's not money. It's about competition. It's about doing exactly what Ohtani did. Okay. Ohtani had the same thing on the table, right? He was a young pitcher or hitter, came over and got $2 million to play, right? He had to wait for the system to catch up before he started to make real money. Now he signed, you know, by far the biggest contract in baseball history at $700 million. The idea, though, is that when we talk about players, we talk about them as inanimate objects. You know, he wants to make a lot of money. No, I mean, that's going to happen if he continues to be healthy. But the reality is that the fire in Ohtani and in Sasaki is, I want to go play against the best players in the world. And that is in the United States, right? Japan baseball is at a very high level. Not there with American baseball. Okay, not going to be there yet. Might be over the next 5 or 10 years. I don't know. But, you know, certainly not there. Again, playing against the best. And again, when you look at Ohtani, he's also a guy that Japanese players look at and go, wow, one of our own has gone to America, and he is mentioned in the same breath as Babe Ruth. Okay. One of the best ever. That's where I want to be. So what drives individual players is not something that media people or fans can always relate to, right? He wants to play among the best. In his mind, the rest will take care of itself.
Jim Deshaies will join us coming up at 9:30. We'll talk some Cubs with him. There's another Jim with us now, 312-644-6767. Jim from Homer Glen is hitting leadoff. He's got an interesting trade proposal. Bruce, hey, Jim, good morning.
Gentlemen, good morning. My question centers around the Cubs trading for Crochet, possibly giving up three prospects and that. I'm not hearing anything or reading anything about that. Are you guys hearing anything, and does this make sense? I'll hang up and listen to your response. Thank you.
It makes 100% sense, okay? Now, let's back up. Will the Cubs and White Sox make big trades? The last big trade they made was in 2017, where they ended up with Eloy Jimenez and Dylan Cease for a left-handed pitcher, okay? Left-handed pitcher helped them win for a couple years, but was not a dominant pitcher. Okay. Is this the type of trade you can handle? I mean, for a long time after the trade, you know, you heard, oh, you just traded two superstars to the White Sox that have made them a contending team in Cease and Jimenez.
Yeah.
And that was true. It also helped the Cubs because they were competing for divisions and championships in 2017, 18, 19. It fizzled out. So will the Cubs and White Sox make a trade? Are the White Sox, with owner Jerry Reinsdorf and GM Chris Getz, gun-shy about trading to the Chicago Cubs? I don't think so. I think if they believe that Matt Shaw and that Triantos and that Horton would bring back a Crochet, I think the White Sox would make that deal.
Yeah,
if they felt that was enough. Okay. So they're going to be looking for three top prospects, not guys that are rated top in every organization, but looking at certain organizations and saying, these are the top players that we want. Okay. Not just saying we want your 1, 4, and 12. From organization to organization, Judson, it's different.
Yeah, you've got Owen Casey in there as well. The Cubs have 8 top 100 prospects. But also, let's go a little deeper into what Chris Getz wants back from Garrett Crochet, because he's rather specific, right? He wants position players, right? He wants hitters. He's not looking for other pitchers from what you read. And then also, I've heard that he wants to be stronger up the middle, right? Whether it's position players or your shortstop, your second baseman, your center fielders, catchers. What do we know about what exactly Chris Getz is looking for Garrett Crochet?
Just what you said. I mean, he wants...
Not 18, 19-year-olds, right? But does he want proven players?
Number one, he wants contract control. Okay. So it's almost...
Would he want a Nico Horner?
No. He wouldn't want Nico Horner.
Too old?
Too old, too much money. You know, he's 2 years away from free agency. That's not what he wants. He would want Matt Shaw.
So closer to big league ready than big leaguers.
Matt Shaw, okay. Yeah. Matt Shaw is playing Team USA.
Right.
He's hitting up a storm. His position is third or second. We don't know for sure. That's more in line with what he wants. James Triantos, you know, Owen Casey. Those are the guys.
Do the Cubs have any untouchables?
No. I mean,
should they have any, in your opinion?
No, I don't think so. No.
I like me some Matt Shaw. Yeah. I guess it's just, you know, you can't get overwhelmed by curiosity.
Well, would you trade a possible all-star in Shaw 3 years from now for 2 dominant years of Crochet helping you try to win a World Series?
I would go get Crochet.
Okay.
Yeah. I've seen... Now, he has his own set of concerns, right? But I will say the amount of innings that he threw while looking strong through all of them for a guy who's had a couple of arm injuries, you got to keep that in mind. No, Garrett Crochet is a one of one.
Right.
The rest are projection that you hope can be reliable big league players.
Kudos go out to the White Sox pitching people, Ethan Katz, Getz, the managers that were there, both of them last year, for the way that they handled Crochet. It ended up being perfect, right? Yeah. So he's, you know, to the wall pitching the first half of the year. The second half of the year, I think his last 10 starts, didn't go over 60 pitches, but was still able to go out there, build innings up, build up his cachet as a starting pitcher. In this era, it worked out perfectly. There's so many teams that start bullpens every day, and they only get 2 to 3 innings out of the starter. So Crochet didn't stand out all that much, other than the fact that in games where you thought he was strong enough and, you know, ready to go 7 innings, he came out after 60 pitches. But, you know, you got 140 innings out of a guy that had a total in his career of 79 innings pitched in the major leagues over 4 years. So that's something that's missed. With all the White Sox disaster of last year and the hate, They had the comeback player of the year, and they handled him beautifully. So they must get credit for it. Crochet must get credit for going along with the program as well. It was an unbelievable year. And the White Sox are in the enviable position, not as a franchise, but as a team in the offseason, that they have the most desirable pitcher in baseball ready to be dealt.
Back to the phones, 312-644-6767. Ron is with us on the South Side. Ron, good morning.
Yes, good morning. Speaking of trades, I think it's a possibility they have the Sox will move from city. But I want to ask you all, because I don't think that the Sox are going to be able to move Robert at all. I think he's going to have to come back in the season and show. And it's kind of unfortunate because trying to improve this team with trades and you only have Crochet, it's really nobody else there. And, you know, Robert was the star of the team. So you all can comment on whether y'all think it's a mark for Robert at this time. Thanks.
Well, we will. You're teasing our top of the hour subject because we will talk about Luis Robert on our stay or go segment. But, you know, very briefly, I think we will talk a little bit, Ron. We'll talk a little bit more at the top of the hour about it. But again, Judson, when you look at Robert, he's many different things to many different people, and nobody can exactly pinpoint who he is right now. The 38 home run hitter in 2023, or the guy that struggled after coming back from injury in 2024.
No matter what, you're not selling him at the. He had an 87 ops plus last year. 2 years ago, he had a 130 ops plus. That guy that he was 2 years ago, I'm not selling him as the guy that he was last year.
Yeah, but is he the guy from 2 years ago? So we'll go more.
I'm going to give him a chance, right?
We'll go more into that at the top of the hour.
Yeah, and by the way, Ryan Fuller, the new director of hitting, he's going to have a big hand in getting him back to the guy that he was 2 years ago. Whether Luis Robert Jr. goes on to be a great player for the Sox for 10 years or is a great half a season, and then they continue to build, which you think they might do, director of hitting for the White Sox, Ryan Fuller, will join us coming up in just a little bit, right? I mean, that job, Bruce, it's kind of hard to put your finger on directly, that job. Just because it's anything and everything, you know, director of hitting, direction of hitting is hit the ball middle, up the middle. Yeah. I'm an old school guy.
In this new era of front offices, the autonomy that people have in different departments is huge, okay? And departments are bigger. The White Sox are getting to that point with R&D and with metrics. They're getting to the point that some other teams like Houston have been to for 12 or 14 years already.
Hey, just a reminder, by the way, if you're looking for something to do today, and we have it for you, stop by and say hello to Lawrence Holmes and Layla Rahimi today at Rally House Wrigleyville. They'll be there until 10 a.m. You can meet them and enter to win a $25 gift card to Rally House before Ohio State takes on Northwestern across the street at Wrigley Field. Wrigley is busy today, Bruce, not with baseball, busy with some college football. How about that?
Yeah, Northwestern and Ohio State.
Very cool. From tees to hoodies and jackets to game day flair, there's something for every fan at Rally House. Coming up next, color analyst of the Cubs from the Marquee Sports Network, Jim Deschaise, joins us coming up.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to Shopify.com/Odyssey Podcast to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/Odyssey Podcast.
Where he's positioned at the start, how hard the ball is hit.
I think he got him
again.
He's
going to do it again.
Left field, Hayes, gone! And Nico Horner his second homer of the night. And the Cubs get a run back, and it is 8-5. Go, Nico.
How about that?
It's Inside the Clubhouse on 6-7 The Score. Judson Richards and Bruce Levine here with you. All guests brought to you by Aturo, your all-weather tire at Aturo.com. Bruce, you know our next guest well.
Yeah, a good friend and the great color analyst on Marquee and the Cubs television broadcast, along with the Boog Shambi, our good friend Jim Deshays, taking some time out on a Saturday morning to join us and talk a little baseball. And the weather, JD's starting to look like hot stove weather now, so we can officially call this the hot stove. Good morning. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you fellas doing today?
We're doing great. Hey, when we started to talk today about free agents, the latest hot Japanese pitcher, Roki Sasaki, came up in our conversation. And, you know, Judson and I were talking about copycat things in Major League Baseball. Would you consider the success of the Japanese pitchers and players over the last 5 to 7 years indicative of maybe this guy looking like the next great pitcher? Maybe he is, maybe he isn't.
Well, I think, you know, I was looking at some video of him not too long ago. Yeah, I mean, he's a stud. He's going to make any team he joins significantly better. He's a top of the rotation arm. He's got a fastball that tops out at 102 miles an hour. His secondary pitches are really good. 6'3", broad-shouldered kid. And he's, 23 years old. So it's a huge get for whoever lands him. He might ultimately be, and this is, you know, you don't know, but he could possibly be the best pitcher to come over from Japan. That's saying something.
JD, how surprised were you that Cody Bellinger opted in with the Cubs? And what does that tell us about this offseason, potentially in free agency?
Yeah, I guess I would say mildly surprised. You know, it seemed like as we got towards the end of the season, listening to what he had to say, he was kind of, you know, caught in between. There was no real good solid message that you could read that he was going to either opt in or opt out. I thought, you know, testing the waters of what might be out there, that he would take a shot at it. But he was in an enviable position, right, because he can do it all over again. So it's a guy, he's a very talented player who has a lot of confidence in his ability. So I think he figured running back one more year and try to put up some big numbers and then take another shot at free agency. So I don't know exactly what it means. I know it does make things a little more interesting for the Cubs in terms of flexibility with their roster. That's not to say that they couldn't move him if they decided that they needed to move him. But either way, right, if they move him, then it's got to be something really good coming back. And if not, you've got a very talented player who can do a lot of different things for you.
Yeah, you know, delving a little deeper into Bellinger, you know, he's being rumored to be out there as a trade possibility. You know, you talk about the Cubs' offense in particularly the first part of the year, and you look at him with two injuries and the projected numbers if he gets 600 at bats, which he hasn't been able to do the last couple of years due to injuries. It's kind of, yeah, you know, we need not only Bellinger, but to add another hitter, not subtract Bellinger. But as you said, if you're going to trade him, you're going to get something back.
Yeah, and it's difficult because they're locked in at so many different positions. So the idea of adding another bat, you know, you start to play that game, well, you know, where's said bat going to play? Obviously, there are other people you could trade. If you get a premier player, you just get that player and then adjust accordingly. You know, it's going to be interesting to see how they play this guy. I just don't know how it's going to shake out. You know, PCA is going to play center field every day, right? Suzuki, I don't think, enjoys being the DH, but if Bellinger's back, Suzuki's going to end up doing a lot of DHing. You know, there's going to be some questions that have to be answered, but there's plenty of time to sort that out.
Jim DeShays, color analyst on the Cubs from the Marquee Sports Network, with us on 6-7 The Score. JD, how do you think Craig Counsell's year two will be different from his first year?
I don't know. I think he settled in pretty quickly. I mean, it happened in a hurry, no doubt. So having a year here, being part of the culture here, being in that clubhouse, getting to know so many of the players, obviously he won't have those issues heading into spring training. But in terms of how he manages a ball club and how he goes about it, he's been doing this a long time. So he's kind of a plug-and-play guy. He's really smart. No matter whose clubhouse you put him in, you're going to feel really good about who you have as your manager. So I don't think there'll be any real significant issues for him. Obviously, you know, he's made some changes with the coaching staff. But beyond that, I don't see anything, any real major issues.
JD, were you surprised, you know, watching him every day as a manager for the first time, as opposed to 12 or 19 games that the Cubs played the Brewers? Were you surprised at how scientific and how metrics oriented he is? And you know, an example would be his lineups every day. If you went 1 through 9, you would see basically 1 through 9. The OPS being the highest number, 1, 2, 3, 4, all the way down. He's not the only manager that does that, but he does seem to be very scientific about his approach and be ready with that science and his gut when the time approaches throughout the game.
Yeah, and I think that's why he was so attractive to Jed Hoyer, and I think that's why he was – you know, a lot of clubs would have had interest in him because when you think about him as a player, right, you first go to, oh, scrappy middle infielder, hard-nosed player, old school. When you see him as a manager, you go, no, this is a smart guy who understands the analytics in the game, understands how important data is, and has the ability to blend those two pieces of the game. So I kind of, you know, his reputation when he was in Milwaukee was that he was a forward-thinking guy, had spent time in their front office, was, you know, a very smart, cerebral guy. So I assumed that he was all in terms of the analytics in the modern game, but also has great feel with people. That's such an important part of it. Just how do you relate to people? How do you manage people? And he's right in the title of the job. You're the manager.
JD, do you have a favorite prospect that you're excited to see at some point get a real shot at the bigs?
Oh, boy. Well, we've got a lot of them on the horizon. You guys were talking about Matt Shaw earlier. It's going to be fun to see him develop. Owen Casey, a little more with Alcantara. Cade Horton, when healthy, I want to see what he does. Ben Brown, we got teased by Ben Brown last year. And then, you know, the injury shut him down. So I'm just curious to see what a healthy Ben Brown over the course of a full season looks like.
What did Miguel Amaya show you last year as far as growth as a catcher, a leader, a hitter, basically a major league starting catcher? Did he check by the end of the year, did he check most of the boxes for you?
Well, offensively, you know, it was a little dicey there for a while, wasn't it? I think there were a lot of conversations like, "Man, I don't know if this is gonna pan out." And then he made that adjustment with his swing, and there was a lot of talk that that's not easy to do in season, to make, you know, that kind of a mechanical adjustment. And he became a much better offensive player over the last couple months of the season. So that was huge in terms of just trying to analyze his development and for his own confidence heading into this year. You know, obviously they need to settle on somebody else to pair with him back there. But I think he's done enough to come into camp as your primary catcher next year. You know, whether that's a guy that catches 125 games or 100 games, I don't know. It depends on who they get to be the number two. The thing that's really hard to quantify, Bruce, and this is not to question his abilities back there. Every pitcher on every staff publicly will say, I love throwing to this guy, right? That was Wilson Contreras. I love throwing to Willie. We love Willie. And then afterwards you find out, some guys weren't real happy with Willie. And we all do it as pitchers because the catcher's our teammate and we want to stand up for him. So it's hard to know exactly what the pitcher-catcher relationship looks like. But from what I've heard about Amaya even coming up through the system, he was very well regarded in terms of his leadership skills, very likable in the clubhouse. So I would assume that's good. That piece of it is good. The throwing part of it has to get better. That's not to say that, you know, you can't have a winning team and have a primary number one catcher who gives up a lot of stolen bases. It's happened with a lot of clubs over the years, but you'd like to see him improve in that aspect of it. So I guess dropping the word salad on you here, I'm fairly bullish on his prospects going forward, but not convinced that he's going to settle in and be a number one starter over the long haul.
Jim Deshaies with us on 6-7 The Score on Inside the Clubhouse. Jim, take a look at Isak Paredes. The concerns, if you have any, or can he get it right as far as the road and home splits? He seems so much more comfortable on the road. I understand the way that the wind was blowing in, or just, you know, the way it seemed the weather affected Wrigley all year. But there weren't a ton of balls that seemed to be knocked down by the wind from Isak with that unique pull approach. What did you make of his splits?
Yeah, it's weird, isn't it? And Wrigley was a difficult hitter's park this year, and it would be more so for a guy like Paredes. Now, when he was acquired, I think the narrative was that, you know, all the studies, all the data suggested that he would not be negatively impacted all that much by Wrigley. Now, in the year in which the wind was blowing in for a right-handed pull hitter, and, you know, it's not like he's left center either. It's a lot of, like, left. The biggest part of left field is, you know, down the line into the well, right? So it would be understandable that the power would suffer a little bit in a year like last year. But I still think he's a big, strong kid. His at-bats are good. He takes his walks. He sees a lot of pitches. I think last year was a bit of an anomaly. It's always tough traded, you know, in season to settle in with your new club. So I think the power is going to show up next year. It had better, right? you got to get a little more pop out of that position. It was kind of a black hole this year with the first Christopher and then the Paredes. So, you know, what's, you know, 25 home runs? Check the box. I'd be happy with that.
JD, I get this question from friends and fans all the time about the broadcast side of doing a television game, and in particular on Marquee. You know, the last 5 years, there's been a lot of three in the booth to go along with two in the booth. From a technical point of view, for you as the main analyst, how much extra work does it take for you to be able to get in and out? Obviously, Boog has to throw to you and the other analysts. But how different has that been? How hard is that adjustment for a broadcaster?
Yeah, well, we didn't do a lot of it last year. And I don't know that Boog and I did any three-man boost last year. I know I did with Pat a couple of times. Boog and I probably did, but we didn't do many. It's just the challenge is for the play-by-play guy to kind of direct it all, and he and the producer to make sure everybody is able to get in there. And it can sometimes be a little bit of a challenge, like who's going to jump on this replay. You know, you got to try to create some room for your co-analyst. You could give him a little room where he can step in, he or she, to make their points. So it can be a little challenging in that regard, but not, you know, it's not too big of a deal.
Joining us on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline is Jim Deshaies, CircaLasVegas.com. JD, the Cubs said goodbye to another. He signed with the Angels, but Kyle Hendricks had a pretty good run as a Cub, didn't he?
Yeah, he's my all-time favorite, and I'm not alone in saying that. I think anybody that's been around the Cubs over the last decade, you know, if Kyle's not number one on their list, he's in the top three. He's just such a solid human. Had a great career on the mound, obviously, here. But such a good guy, so accessible, always understood, you know, the nature of it, made time for everybody. You know, I joked with him last year at the Cubs convention. I do a panel with pitchers every year, and he's been on it every year because he's articulate, he's smart, and, you know, they're always going to ask him to do it. He's never going to say no. I said, you know, one of these years, Kyle, it's going to be our last time doing this. And it turned out to be this year, unless, you know, for some reason he comes back in a Cub uniform. That's highly unlikely. He'll probably finish his career out there on the West Coast. But just great. Just a wonderful guy and an outstanding pitcher. Underrated. I feel bad that he never made an All-Star team as a Cub. I he's probably one of the top two or three pitchers in the game active that have not made an All-Star team. That's been around for any length of time. So that's a little bit of a disappointment. He probably doesn't care, but I do.
As we let you go, how much money did you win on the Paul Tyson fight last night? And did you watch all 8 rounds of those two minute rounds? Eight total. Just
Brucey, I'm gonna tell you how unplugged I am. I saw a little preview for that the other day, and I said, Mike Tyson's going to fight again? I had no idea this was happening. I had no clue.
I think, you know what? I think after a lot of people watched it last night, they have the same opinion as you had.
They were wishing they were unplugged.
It was pretty bad, huh?
Yeah, it was bad. I mean, look, I knew it was going to be – it was sanctioned by some mom-and-pop store, okay? Mm-hmm. You know, it wasn't any real athletic – association.
Maybe AARP.
Right.
You watched it. Yeah. Senior Citizen.
It was an exhibition at its highest form. I was over at Marquee yesterday doing a show, and, you know, some of the guys said to me, what do you think? I said, this is wrestling. And, you know, my friend Malik over there said, all right, that's it. Be quiet. You're ruining it for me and my friends. Mm-hmm. Okay. I said, no, it's already ruined. It's, you know, it's wrestling. So,
yeah,
I guess you didn't miss much, JD.
Hey, going Danny Bonaducci. That's what I want to see.
Have a great day. Thanks for joining us, JD.
All right, guys. Great to be with you.
Appreciate it, JD. Coming up next, Bruce, this should be good. Chris Sale actually shared more details about the jersey cutting, the infamous jersey cutting incident on Ian Happ's podcast. We'll have an audio for you. Coming up next on 670 The Score. Back with you on Inside the Clubhouse on 670 The Score. Judson Richards, Bruce Levine with you until 11 o'clock. Coming up at 10 o'clock, by the way, we will do Stay or Go. We'll be talking specifically about one White Sox star. We'll get back to the phone lines as well, 312-644-6767. Also at 10:30, Bruce, Ryan Fuller, the new director of hitting for the White Sox, will join us. Looking forward to that. Very quickly, let's get to the audio. The Compound Podcast, Ian Happ's podcast, they had a very, very good Atlanta Braves pitcher on, Chris Sale, a one-time Chicago White Sox, the infamous 2016 jersey cutting. Ian was somewhat hesitant to say, is it okay if we talk about it? Chris Sale seemed fine talking about it.
I have a knife in my locker. And that was another misconception. Everyone thinks it was scissors. It was a pocket knife. So I literally just put the knife right in the middle of the shirt right here and just all the way down. We had like an island in the clubhouse. I put it on the island. I'm like, all right, Rob, we got to wear the 83s now. So I'm sitting there in my locker. Here comes Robin. And Robin, with one of the most impossible jobs on the planet, managing me as a young guy. I actually saw him this past weekend in New York. It was awesome seeing him and catching up. But so he calls me in the office and he's like, Chris, like, you got to wear these things, man. Like, you got to wear it. Like, there's no way around it. Like, sponsors and yada, 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 you know, the money, the sponsorship, all this other stuff. And I was like, well, my jersey's gone, man. Like, it is shredded. He's, and this is kind of what set everything off. He was like, all right, they're making you a new one. And I was like, what? They're like, yeah, they have extras. They're just, you know, they're going to make you a new one before the game. And I literally was just like, all right, they don't have 26 extras. And this is probably another misconception. It was like, this wasn't like me throwing this huge rage, you know, I'm not kicking and screaming at this point. So I literally, you know, and this was right before BP guys are still there. And it was almost like, so I walk out there, I grab my knife, and I go around the clubhouse, and every single jersey, I think there might have been 4 of them. And there's 4 of them still floating around. I'm not naming names, but there are people that have non-cut-up jerseys that I've signed for them, actually. It's my all-time favorite jersey to sign. And So I'm walking, and people are laughing. I'm laughing because, you know, whoever's sitting at their locker, I'm cutting their jersey, and I'm, like, saying, like, this, like, peace offering almost. It's like, you know, imagine it being in Atlanta, and it's like, I'm at Travis's locker. I'm like, dude, yeah, you're my catcher. You got my back. You know, go with Mikey's. He's like, bro, you make, you know, web gems for me in the outfield. You got my back. And, you know, just went around and did it all. And it was kind of like a funny thing. So then I get done with all of them, tell Rob to do it. And then that's when kind of things got off the rails and it was like, all right, well, you're done.
Bruce, what do you remember most about that?
Just the awkwardness of Ventura, the manager at that time. He was talking about Robin trying to talk to us about this getting out. And at that time, they sent him home.
Right.
You know, wasn't pitching, you know, sent home. And Sale's one of my favorite people to cover because he still had a lot of the 12-year-old boy in him, the enthusiasm, the fire, the anger, you know, at times. And this was, you know, the anger of, I'm not wearing these, you know, messed up uniforms. I'm not doing it.
He said they fit like a muumuu.
Yeah.
He also said he had
experience.
Yeah, right. And he didn't want to pitch in one of those. And he also said that the 83s was one of his favorites as well. Right.
So, I mean, you know, again, you know, terrific pitcher, terrific teammate, interesting guy to interview. Again, immaturity of a young guy thinking he can control the world. I have great stories about him going after Victor Martinez and his brother because his brother was in center field in Detroit, giving signals to Victor when Sale was pitching against him. He wanted to fight them both. I have vivid memories of him going down to the Kansas City clubhouse at Guaranteed Rate, pounding on the door after a game where there was a fight between the Royals and the White Sox, him trying to get in to fight all 25 guys.
The whole team.
At that time, it was 25 guys. He was ready. And, you know, they had to restrain him from trying to get in. He was pounding on it. He was actually going to fight all 25 guys. I mean, so
good,
again.
Good luck with that.
Again, but the fire and the, you know, the athlete, the, again, terrific teammate, great person, interview, all these things, you know, made Chris Sale and still do the great pitcher that he was. He's going to win another Cy Young this year, okay? He'll be the second guy ever to win Cy Young in both leagues. And the White Sox will have two former pitchers who were the 2024 comeback pitchers of the year.
That's
when
right.
Coach A is traded.
Yeah, that's right. And I do believe David Robertson said on The Score in years past that he has one of those autographed jerseys. One of those was Robertson's. He told us on The Score. So Chris Sale wouldn't give it up, but we do know that one. Paulie and Mike, we see you waiting on hold. We'll get to your phone calls on the other side. Coming up next, stay or go. Will Luis Robert Jr. make it through this offseason and be a White Sox when the 2025 season begins? That's coming up next on The Score.